On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. So glad you're joining us here today. You might be joining us live here on 1150 AM KKNW in the Seattle area, anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio, or perhaps after the fact on one of the, dozens of stations and podcasts that this ends up on, including iTunes and ChristineUpchurch.com. But I tell you, wherever and whenever you're listening from today, you're going to be grateful you joined us, because we're going to be talking about a subject that we've never addressed in this way before. And I know I always like to give you guys a little teaser, and I'm doing it again. Sorry, I just can't help myself. But I want to first say hello to the man behind the technological magic, Mr. Benny Mathers. Good morning, Benny.
You big tease.
I know.
How dare you do that to us? I love it. I think it's cute.
Of course, you know, there's a description of the show if people want to read it, and but I like to surprise.
And I might have teased even before you. Oh. I pre-teased you.
You did?
In the traffic.
Oh, that's right.
Well, there you go.
That's right. Yes.
You didn't even know you were even being teased.
That's true. That's true. And I love that our guest today, he's taken this notion of travel and put it into a novel / maybe autobiographical in some ways, in a way that helps us to not only understand a hero's journey, but the journey to self. And the guest I'm talking about is Tim Shields. And the book I'm talking about is A Curious Year in the Great Vivarium Experience. Let's see. Tim Shields has spent more than 15 years writing, marketing, and developing campaigns for some of the world's largest brands. He's a ghostwriter. Two of his visionary clients are New York Times bestselling authors who are leaders in the fields of healing and transformation. The first book he worked on debuted at number 15 on Amazon and was translated into, get this, 28 languages within the first 9 months of publication. And he's decided to write his own book, and apparently it took him several writes and rewrites and a lot of self-reflection, and I'm glad he did, because it's a fascinating book. And it's entitled A Curious Year in the Great Vivarium Experience. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Tim Shields. Hey, Tim.
Thank you. Honor to be here.
First, I have to talk about that word, vivarium. I had to look it up on the internet. Can you first share with our listeners the definition of the word and why you chose that word in the title of your book?
Yes. Well, there is a permanent art installation in the Seattle Sculpture Garden, which is very close to where I was living in Seattle. And the definition of a vivarium, it's called the Newcomb Vivarium. And a definition of a vivarium is a place such as a laboratory where live animals or plants are kept under conditions simulating their natural environment as for research.
Uh-huh.
So I was in there one day, and it's this giant nurse log, and it's kind of created this whole life around it. And I just was in there and I was like, oh my God, this is the concept of the book. Inside the vivarium is our life's journey. We're here for research. We're here to screw up, to learn, to hopefully like have a soul, our soul move into expansion and everything.
Right.
And outside of the vivarium is the unifying principle of all of our existence, which is consciousness. It's what we're all connected to and organizes matter and gives us life.
Right. So in some sense, we're both the observed in this vivarium, so to speak, but we're also the observer of it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just kind of, a lot of people were like, oh, that title's too weird. And I'm just, I don't know. I like it, and it's my book. So I was trusting it. And then some people were like, the cover's too weird. And I'm like, that's great. I want people to pick it up. I want them to be curious what this is all about.
Yeah, I like the cover. I do.
Yeah, my friend nailed it. So So the experiment was when my mom passed away. I bought a one-way ticket to India, and I didn't have a plan, a clue. I didn't even have a Lonely Planet India.
Right.
I just landed, and I was doing this gratitude and intention exercise where every day I was writing down five things I was grateful for and five things I wanted to create. And just kind of the craziest sort of things unfolded from it. I mean, I wound up volunteering for a guy who's won the equivalent of two Nobel Prizes. I came home with more money than I left with, and I was, you know, I just met a bunch of incredible, inspiring people. And, you know, I didn't have a clue. I was absolutely terrified when I was leaving. I put on this brave face, but I was terrified.
Well, let's talk a little bit about before you left. Now, I know several years ago, I lost both my parents 16 days apart from each other. It was at a time when my marriage was failing, where I was leaving a job that had a lot of prestige, but I could no longer feel like I was in integrity with myself, staying within it. And I was eventually leaving my forever home, you know. And so I know that when we face loss, it can be disorienting. Can you share with our listeners a little bit more about all the sorts of loss that were going on in your life that was sort of the impetus for you to take this experiment to India?
Well, I had kind of almost a decade of sick parents. And my dad had lung cancer and was going through radiation. And I didn't really know at the time. I'm the baby. I'm the youngest by 9 years. And all my and my brothers and sisters are on the East Coast. And they were kind of, I had left New York City for Seattle in 2000, actually. After getting passed up for two jobs in the World Trade Center, I left New York City in 2001. And my siblings were kind of keeping it from me that my mom was slipping from Parkinson's and dementia because they didn't want me to worry. And, you know, they just wanted me to live my life out here.
Right.
So anyway, at some point it became very obvious. And, you know, every time I went home, she was kind of a little bit more of her was gone. And I definitely kind of call myself a mama's boy. I was very, very close with my mother. And, you know, I wrote in a book, it's like when I had trying, I mean, when you have a sick parent, you're always kind of like, I don't want to use the word fantasizing, but you're like running through what this experience will be like when you lose your parent.
Of course.
And
yeah.
And when you actually lose them, I wrote in a book, it's like a tornado or tsunami sweeps through your life. And no matter how hard you try to rebuild, something intangible is lost forever.
Right.
So it really just kind of knocked, you know, took the rug out from under me. And I felt incredibly lost, and I wasn't working at the time. And, I felt really kind of hopeless. And, a friend of my sister, this woman named Sheila Bass, it's kind of like an energy healer, intuitive. And I had a session with her, and she's like, okay, you're a writer. Yep. Okay. I want you to do this exercise. I want you to write down five things you're grateful for and five things you want to create. And you're going to find that the things that you create today are things you're going to be grateful for in the future. And I was like, I'll try anything at this point. So I just went to, you know, the local drugstore. I bought a $2 notebook, and I just started creating my future. I mean, I didn't actually realize it. I was just doing these exercises. And
right.
the first thing I wrote was like, you know, I surrender money, but I need the right job for right now. And I just want freedom, and I want a cool boss, and I want cool people. And, you know, one of the designers who, I worked with did my cover, and he became one of my best friends. And, you know, I had a 3-month contract, and then they extended it to 6 months. And I was like, okay, but I'm leaving in 6 months. And right before I left, my boss was like, pulled me aside. And he's like, well, first he's like, what would you think about working 10 to 20 hours a week while you're in India? And I was like, that sounds amazing. You know? So, I was living, you know, pretty cheap or almost or free in some places when I was volunteering. And then at the end of 3 months, I came back home because I had miles. So I surprised my family for a family reunion. And on the way I stopped in Seattle, and my boss, this is 9 months into the contract. Uh-huh. He pulls me aside and he's like, you're going to need money to travel. Just bill me for 30 hours a week for the last 3 months of your contract.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And one of the things that I had created, you know, I was like, I want a windfall of money. Uh-huh. You know, I wrote that like 10 months prior.
Uh-huh.
So I was getting paid to basically travel. And then when I went back to Asia, I linked up with a friend of mine who's he owns a photography business where he's like the school photographer at international schools. So, I mean, I was just a backpacker and I was staying at like business hotels, free room, booze, board, $500 a week. And then I'm getting paid 30 hours a week on like a corporate salary. So
what an incredible manifestation.
Incredible. Unbelievable. Yeah. And, I thought I had enough money to travel for 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. I had packed up my life in Seattle, but, it turned into 15 months. And, you know, the last 3 months I spent in Berlin, but the book occurs within a year of traveling in Asia.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And we're going to get more into this book and about his travel experiences, but even more than his travel, his experiences into self. Stay tuned for more with Tim Shields here in just a few moments. I am so high.
Preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Are you ready to shift gears from spiritual seeker to spiritual rock star? Let Nova Whiteman be your aligning force that will help you navigate the ups and downs of this human experience. Tune in to Spiritual Alignment Radio with Nova Whiteman every second Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit NovaWhiteman.com. That's NovaWhiteman.com.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field, or aura, surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura, which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Hero can save us. I'm not gonna.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm talking to Tim Shields, author of A Curious Year in the Great Vivarium Experiment. Now, Tim, people hear about travel adventures, and it sounds like this really cool thing, you know, you get on a plane and you land somewhere and you have these wonderful adventures. But tell us a little bit about that transition from when you've like stored and or gotten rid of most of your stuff and you get on this plane and you don't really have a plan and then eventually you arrive. What are some of the emotions that arise?
Definitely a lot of anticipation mixed with anxiety.
Uh-huh.
Because you're jumping headlong into the unknown.
Right.
And there is, I mean, there's nothing to hang your hat on. It's just like, wow. You know, when I took off, I didn't even have a Lonely Planet India. I mean, for some reason, I had a Lonely Planet Nepal, which doesn't really do you any good when you land in India.
Uh-huh.
you know, my experience is when you jump, the net appears.
Uh-huh.
But it is so hard to step off that ledge and trust. And I mean, even I'm talking to you right now from San Miguel de Allende, Mexico,
uh-huh.
which is where I came after when I was working on this book, and I came down here afterwards for 3 months to finish my own book. So I have a little bit of a community down here and stuff. But I mean, even the last, I've been here a week, even the last 2 or 3 weeks, I even know, you know, now I know what's coming more uh-huh. or less here, but uh-huh. it's still so much anxiety to jump out of the routine of your daily life. Which sometimes is good and sometimes is bad. But yeah, I don't know. You just have to, you know, I knew since I was 17, and I kind of talked about this in the book, that I wanted to be a writer. And I knew that if you wanted to have big things to talk about and write about, you have to have big experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I always knew that I had to do this huge travel trip. And I had done a couple little ones before. The first one I did was in 2006. When I had a job and a relationship end in the same week, and I was kind of like,
oh dear.
I think life is telling me something. And I always wanted to go volunteer and be of service or something like that. So I went to volunteer at an orphanage in Tanzania. And at that time it was like, you know, Bush was in office and the world was, I mean, not that the world is great right now, but I was yeah. going to Africa. I was going to Africa for the first time, and boy, I was terrified then too.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure that like I didn't have any clothes that said Seattle or like anything American.
Right.
I mean, turns out Tanzania is probably one of the most peaceful African countries, but I didn't know that,
uh-huh.
you know, but that was another wild thing where everything just kind of appeared and unfolded. And
so as you let go of your environment, like, you know, your environment in Seattle, say, to go to Mexico, and you're letting go of some of your routine. What is it in that stage that's not only anxiety producing, but also has great potential for creation?
Well, for me as a writer, like I said, I tried to fit into the corporate world, but it just never fit me. And you know, every time I sort of get out of Seattle, I feel like, oh, wow, my life is working a little bit better. You know, I mean, when you take off, you have no choice but kind of to surrender and trust mm-hmm. the flow.
Right.
And I find it's much easier to be open-hearted when you're traveling.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the most amazing thing that you discover is like, wow, the majority of the people in the world, wherever you go, are good people. And I mean, I just
that's a powerful statement, Tim. That's a yeah. really powerful statement, because I think a lot of people have the opposite perception. Like, they need to put up walls when they travel. They need to have the blinders on so they don't engage with people so that they remain safe. But what you're saying mm-hmm. is open your heart and be more vulnerable in some sense.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of to myself framed it as like my year of yes. You know, when I took uh-huh. off, I'm like, when I get invited to whatever, like I got invited to Kashmir. So I just met these two guys. I had a connection to them, but they owned a shop in Dharamshala, India.
Uh-huh.
And we hit it off and they were like, "Oh, you should come up to Kashmir. It's God's country. It's the most beautiful place you'll ever be." And I was volunteering for this guy for 2 months, so I wasn't really traveling around India. And at the end of it, you know, I was kind of like, India is a huge, overwhelming, you know, place. So, I mean, I was like, well, I got this invite, so I'm going to go up to Kashmir. And uh-huh. it was phenomenal. You know, the U.S. State Department warned Americans not to go up there.
Really?
And my sisters, you know, who assumed the role of my mom, were freaking out. But uh-huh. You know, if I might not go up there on my own, but since I had sort of a host family and friends, I went up there and it was phenomenal. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. Go ahead.
Describe a little bit about Kashmir and why it would be described as God's country.
Srinagar, I think was the capital. That's where I was, but it was just this beautiful like giant lake, and there were fountains in the lake, and it's surrounded by mountains. And then at one point I went with these three guys, on a pack mule trip up to this alpine lake at 14,000 feet. And we camped up there and we fished, and there was a 18,000 foot glacier above me.
Wow.
And there were just these alpine meadows. And, the whole time I heard this like squeaking, on the back of one of the horses. I was like, what is that? And then I realized it was like a chicken. Like later, it was a chicken that was tied up to the horse. And I was like, oh God, you guys clean that over there. I don't want to see it.
Oh,
I'll eat
dear.
It. But, you
oh,
know,
gosh.
But we caught fish in the, you know, like trout or something in the lake. And it was just, oh my God, underneath the most stars you've ever seen. And it was really, I mean, it was like God's country, you know, it was exactly what they said. So, and the guy that I volunteered for, his name's MC Mehta, and he's won like the equivalent of 2 Nobel Prizes, and sued the state of India over the course of 20 years to create a green zone around the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, so tell us what was going on with the Taj Mahal. I remember hearing about this a little bit in the news a number of years ago, and then talk to us a little bit about what this man was doing to try to fix it.
Well, I mean, there were all these industries around it, as well as like, you know, slaughterhouses and stuff. And the industries were making the marble. It was pitting the marble and turning it yellow. And, you know, there would be like birds of prey dropping like innards down on like tourists and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So he sued the state of India over the course of 20 years over the fact that the cultural heritage of India is more important than the short-term gains of industry.
So it's like toxic smoke and toxic rain then, essentially,
yeah, yeah.
That was pitting the marble.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and this guy was just one of the most extraordinary people I've ever met. Super humble, super simple. And I met this American scientist over there, and he was like, this is the most important, like lawyer in India since Gandhi. And that
wow.
was another thing. Like, when I was traveling before I took off, I was like, I want to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my sister's roommate from Boston 20 plus years prior, she's like, uh-huh. find Pari. And Pari, you know, was like, do you want to volunteer in an eco ashram? And, you know, I was like, sure. I don't know what the hell that means, but
uh-huh.
I'll do it. Like,
right, right.
You know, I'll sweep floors. That's not above me. And then I find out who this guy is. And he's like, yeah, I need somebody to write some grant proposals for me. And I was
uh-huh.
like, well, I've never written a grant proposal, but I'm a writer, so I'll figure it out.
Right.
So I just got to like tail this guy for 2 months. And I mean, one of the most beautiful human beings. So,
was he successful in suing the industries and the government about trying to protect the Taj
he
Mahal?
Was. Yeah, he had 1,200 industries removed from around the Taj Mahal. Which, you know, really upset these business owners. I mean,
sure.
There were at one point there were 20,000 people like burning his image and effigy, and he had to have like 24-hour security for 2 years. Yeah.
So he was risking his life in order to try to save the Taj Mahal and perhaps a portion of the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. He's at one point he had the Supreme Court of India was holding a special court for him every Friday because mm-hmm. he had so many like cases where he was, you know, protecting, you know, he was protecting the voiceless people of India and the environment, you know. It's like the earth is going to survive without us, but we can't survive without the earth. So,
Wow.
We all got to wake up.
And you got to not only meet him, but you got to work with him.
Yeah. And I mean, if I had just met him, I would have been totally, you know, kind of intimidated by him because he was such a huge figure.
Sure.
But I got to know the man and I just got to hang out with him. And he had like the most incredible, contagious laugh. And we would just like sit around and talk and tell me incredible stories and laugh. It was great.
So
I miss him.
You've talked about the importance of intention for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that he too would use intention to create?
You know, he was more kind of, I think so. Maybe not at such a conscious level, but he definitely had a vision and he was a man of principle.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, at one point I asked him, because, you know, when you're a younger person like me and looking up to this huge figure who's done all these things in your life, you know, I'm like, what did you do when there were these forks in the road? Because you could have went this way or that way. And he just was like, I just got quiet and I trusted my faith. And, you know, they were not easy decisions, but you just, you know, you go on your principles and your morals and service. And mm-hmm. that's kind of how he operated.
This is a wonderful story of travel, and I want to learn more about how this experiment, so to speak, how your travels changed you. Stay tuned for more with Tim Shields here in just a few moments.
Be your hero. Would you dance if I asked you to dance? Or would you run?
Preceding audio was via a Skype call.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at louparadise.com.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
Miss any shows during the week?
No!
Don't worry, we've got you covered.
Yahoo!
With the free Transformation Talk Radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand.
Yes!
Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Love, hold me in your arms tonight. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. I will stand by.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW, 1150 AM. Almost messed up my name there. And Transformation Talk Radio. Benny's laughing over
We've
there.
We've all been there. I mess up my name every day.
I don't know. I've done like, 250, 300 shows, whatever it is. And I, you know, I'm sure you could come up with a great little audio clip of bloopers.
I wouldn't do that to you.
And I'm having a wonderful conversation today with Tim Shields. He is a fascinating individual who's written a book called A Curious Year in the Great Vivarium Experiment. Now, first, Tim, I want to understand why you didn't just make this autobiographical. I mean, you've got the name of somebody else as your main character in the book. Why did you do it that way?
It's a good question. Well, there was a couple of reasons. I was stuck for a really long time on one of the drafts, and I was like, you know, any artist, this is terrible. Nobody's going to want to read this, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at one point I woke up one day and I was kind of, I just had this thought. I'm like, all right, nobody else can tell this story and I'm just going to do the best I can. Uh-huh. And then I also decided, you know, I felt like there were parts that I needed, you know, I said in the beginning, like, I don't want to get a lashing by Oprah, you know, like she did to James Fry or whatever. James Fry, do you remember that whole that Million Little Pieces thing?
I don't remember that. No.
Well, it was like basically, you know, he had said it was autobiographical, but it was much of it was fictionalized. So I just felt like there was parts where, you know, I needed to make up. Sometimes I made up characters. Sometimes I pinched stories from other people while I was traveling. It was really just. And also it kind of gave me a little bit of distance. I was like, okay, people don't have to know everything and they can kind of guess what happened and what didn't.
Sure.
I call that my mythopoeia, which is the creation of story through myth. I love that word.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it just gave me a little bit of distance and then it gave me some freedom to kind of sew together parts of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I like that distance. And I think, you know, moving forward, they will probably, you know, it's kind of based on my events in my life, but it will probably become more fictional, like even more fictionalized. Uh-huh. But you know, if people read it like autobiography, which it is partly, I mean, that's great. And that's a win for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Dan Millman has done the same thing with his series. So, can you talk to us a little bit, Tim, about how you shifted from when you got on that airplane to go travel to India, when you had let go of you know, your mother, letting go of the attachment to a parent is a huge deal. I know that I've experienced it myself. And how you shifted by the time you made it back to the United States. What kind of inner shifts went on?
Well, I mean, travel really forces you to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think it forces you to move into the best parts of yourself. The worst parts of yourself also show up. But I mean, it is this, you know, I think a lot of people romanticize travel.
Sure.
And it's very easy to do when you get home and you can see this beautiful string of events that occurred to have, you know, so you had all these extraordinary experiences. But when you're in it, I mean, there were times when I was on the road that, you know, I was just so lonely and questioning what I was doing, you know, with my life. I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, why can't I just have a normal 9-to-5 job with a 401k at home, you know, and build some sort of quote unquote security of the future. But it's travel is just a series of expansion and contractions. And hopefully you are expanding bigger every time you do it. And, and the contraction's getting worse.
So let's talk.
And when
a
you
little...
come home, you're... Sorry, go ahead.
No, finish your thought, please. When you come home, what?
Oh, just when you come home, you look back and you're like, holy moly. I can't believe I did that. And you just feel expanded, and you learned so much about these outer edges of your own life that you couldn't have known otherwise.
I know that when I've traveled to teach, even being away for a week or traveling to explore other countries, when I return home, I don't feel like the same person, and my environment looks different. My relationships look different. And I can't really quite put my finger on why that is, but I know that I've been changed forever.
Yeah, you've created like a new mold of yourself. And it's like, and you know, like I said, travel for me totally opens my heart. And you know, I feel like every time I come, I don't know if it's Seattle or if it's just coming back into the familiar environment, but every time I come back to Seattle after some travel, I'm like super open hearted. And I'm like, I'm not going to let it happen to me this time. I'm not going to let it, you know, close me down this time. And it's, you know, within like a week or something, you're staring at the floor in an elevator or something instead of like, you know, I don't know if it's Seattle or just being in the familiar, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I certainly think that Seattle has changed over the years. I live out in the burbs, down on an acre next to, it's a 30-acre parcel that is landlocked, you know, natural land. And so I have sort of the best of both worlds. And yet I found that the drivers are different now. There's more tailgating. There's more aggression. And sometimes when I've got a place out on the islands, out on Orcas, and it's sometimes when I'm out there, it's like, okay, this feels to me more like the way we're meant to live. And I think that I can sort of put those shields down out there where there's more nature, where people are looking each other in the eye and talking to each other. So I'm not sure if it's like just city versus, you know, I don't know, more natural areas where there's fewer people or what it is.
Yeah.
But I've definitely experienced
fewer people,
that. Yeah.
Slower pace maybe.
Yeah.
You know, Seattle's also changed so much because it's a full on tech town now.
It is.
And, you know, it's kind of pushed all the artists, a lot of the artists and creatives out. And, you know, I could have stayed there right now. But you know, it's a little stressful, you know, you're in the hustle and I'm a full-time writer, you know, and I don't know what's next. I'm finishing a book project right now. And I have, you know, one paycheck left when I deliver the book. You know, I'm living for like a third of the cost down here and I'm having amazing experiences. Like I love Mexican people. I mean, and the Mexican culture, they're just like heart-centered. Everything's like a fiesta, colors, music, dancing, celebration. They're like enjoying life, where I feel like sometimes in the States or in the big cities, and when you're in your in these jobs, you got your blinders on and you know, you're just kind of focused on the ladder, climbing the ladder. And there's so much more to life than that.
So do you feel like travel has helped teach you how to let go of those things that no longer fit?
I would say the combination of travel and meditation has done that. And really, and meditation really maybe being the biggest one. I mean, I started doing like Dr. Joe Dispenza's work in 2010, and it was about 6 or 7 months before my mom passed away. And, you know, at one of the workshops, he's like, turn to the person and tell them how much you're going to meditate, you know? And I'm like, whatever, maybe 2 times a week.
Right.
And I don't know, for some reason, I just like got totally into it. And I did it almost every day for 6 months. And then I went home to say goodbye to my mom. And then everything sort of unfolded and then, or unraveled perhaps is a better word. But then around 2000, 2014, maybe 2015, I really committed to meditation and I started doing it every day, and it's completely changed my life. I mean,
in what way?
I'm not living, you know, the brain is like a record of the past, and I'm not living. I try not to live in that past loop anymore. I'm more consciously creating like a future loop. So, I'm living into the future, and you know, I think the world is waking up right now, and consciousness is the organizing principle of matter, and it's our thoughts are very real, mm-hmm. and they create very real things. It's like most of us are living in unconscious programs.
Of course.
So I've spent a lot of time going into my unconscious programs and, you know, kind of pulling the weeds out. And I mean, I still slip into them, you know, but, it's a process, and it's a practice. It's a daily practice. So if I don't meditate for like 2 days, I completely feel it. And I'm like, what is going on in my life? I feel uprooted. And then I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't meditated. So,
That's interesting that you said uprooted, because of the fact that one of the benefits I find from meditation and actually doing the healing work that I do, that it's a matter of encouraging a certain type of detachment. So it's this juxtaposition of you know, lessening attachment to our status quo, so to speak, and then being more rooted. What are you rooted into?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a lot of what my book is about, like those getting over those unconscious programs and like really moving into create, surrender, trust. Uh-huh. So it's like create, surrender the outcome, trust that it's going to happen for your highest good. Right. And I mean, when I moved into that, and I try to live by that, I mean, that's why I just packed up. Well, everything kind of lined up for me, but I just packed up and moved down here because the sign showed up, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to trust this. And, you know, if you allow things to happen as opposed to trying to control and predict them, mm-hmm. they unfold in so much more interesting and extraordinary ways than you could ever have dreamed up in your like limited human mind.
Yeah.
So
that's a really important message. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more.
We go hide away in daylight. We go undercover, wait out the sun. Got a secret side in plain sight. Where the streets are empty.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. What does the word healing mean? Many think that healing merely means eliminating symptoms.
However, based on my many years as a healer, I have a much broader perspective on the word. Healing can manifest in a variety of ways, including having physical problems resolved, becoming more emotionally centered, experiencing better relationships, gaining greater clarity, and feeling more spiritually connected. True healing always includes some level of transformation. Whatever form healing takes, there is one commonality, an improvement in quality of life. To me, the highest form of healing goes beyond aligning with wellness. It comes from recognizing our soul's voice and allowing it to speak through us. And in that sense, don't we all yearn to heal into our wholeness? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Benny, stop laughing at me.
It wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Oh, for the first time ever, I stuck my tongue out at him. I felt like I was
that,
probably about
and you missed coming in, which we've
again.
Done it a million times. You messed up your name. So, I mean, yeah, this is a wonderful show today.
But you have to understand, I'm used to having headphones and I hear it all. And I thought okay. He's giving me a hard time. It's a good thing I love you.
You're adorable.
I'm so glad you're here talking, listening to us today. And I'm grateful to be talking to Tim Shields. You know, one of the things you have in each chapter of your book and that you've talked a little bit about is naming five things you're grateful for. How does gratitude play an important role in your life?
Well, it is, you know, Joe Dispenza would say gratitude is a state of receivership. And it's really also a very good grounding element. It's like we're always moving through life so fast, and especially in this day and age where it's just sensory overload and being fed advertisements. And it's crazy, the world we live in right now. But
it's a
great, I mean, it only takes maybe 5 minutes and it's just a pause. I mean, I'm imagining this is what, you know, this is the buzz that like a cigarette smoker gets or something like, but, you know, step out of the moment and pause and just kind of look around you and think about all of the amazing things that are happening in your life or the amazing people that have shown up, serendipities, synchronicities. So I don't know. There is this sort of circle, I think, that is just with gratitude and intention. It's almost like two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. You know, it's they're like complementary energies.
It's interesting because I teach something called the vibration of change, and it's sort of the high level model of how all positive change occurs. And one of the ways in which gratitude fits into it is that it allows us to, on a vibrational level, embrace what is. It puts us into this place of appreciation. So we let go to what is. We're allowing what is, which allows us to sort of ride the wave of potential to the next particle form of reality, to the next change that we want to create. So I absolutely understand that, you know, what you're saying here about it's the flip side of the same coin. But it's an essential part, whether it's through gratitude or some other way in which we can embrace the moment. But I do know that gratitude can be very, very powerful. And I get a kick out of seeing exactly what you were saying you were grateful for, and then also about intention. So talk to us a little bit about how you've used intention to create some pretty big things. But for instance, your book. How did that come about from manifestation and intention?
I mean, I went to my first kind of advanced workshop, Joe Dispenza's, in probably May 2015. And for 4 days, I was kind of meditating on the right conditions to show up for me to bring this book to fruition. So one of the main things was to have a full-time job, because I had been freelancing for most of my career. And it's like, woo, you're cruising along, you're making money, job stops. You're like, you know, damn, I have to change my energy, I have to change my focus. So I wanted this foundation of financial security. So I basically, when I landed in Seattle, I opened my email and a friend had sent me a message in LinkedIn, and he said, hey, I just started at this new job. It's supposed to be the next kind of Uber. It's like the next Uber, unicorn company, $110 million in funding. We need a writer. And I was like, wow, okay.
Great manifestation. So
Then I come back into Seattle on the train and I run into the guy on the street corner. And I was like, okay, this is getting a little more interesting. So I wound up getting that job, and every day for 6 months, well, the job lasted exactly 6 months. And every day before work, I went to a coffee shop for like 30 minutes to an hour, sometimes on a good day, an hour and a half. And I just worked on this terrible draft that I was stuck on. And at the end of the draft, at the end of 6 months was exactly how long it took me to finish this draft.
The draft of your book.
The draft of my book.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was like a second or third draft or something, probably second draft. And then I took a step back and I was like, wow, I think I actually have something here. And at the same time, I got laid off, but I was in such an amazing place. I was kind of like, what great thing is about to happen? And within 5 minutes, within 5 minutes, I get a text from this guy who I always wanted to work with. And he was like, you know, asked me to collaborate with him on a writing project. So, so that started happening. And then at the same time I got that job, another job was courting me. So I reached out to them, but they had filled the position. And then they got back to me the following Monday and they were like, what if we created a position for you? And I was like, this is amazing. So I got this job. I kind of faked my way into a direct, I had like a director role at a marketing agency. And I figured I was going to be there for a couple years, you know, however long it took to finish my book and do all that stuff. And I wound up getting this other opportunity to help somebody write a book. So I quit my job and worked on that full time for 6 months. And then when that ended, I took off to Mexico to finish this book. It's when I came here to San Miguel de Allende the first time. And a bunch of other things happened. But one of the bigger things that happened, which is how I chose the path I chose. About this time last year, I was totally freaking out about whether to self-publish or whether to go the traditional route. And I had this long distance relationship with this girl in Mexico City. And she, along with other people who I would have expected for me to go the traditional route, because I always wanted to be accepted by the gatekeepers, but in this day and age, you know, you should just probably plow forward yourself and trust. And, but anyway, that's a whole other side story. So, this girl from Mexico City was coming to visit me in Seattle on a Wednesday. On a Tuesday, they had their second huge earthquake. So I was like, well, there's no way she's coming, but she wound up coming. We had a great time. She left on like a Sunday evening. Monday morning, I never put a time frame on my intentions, but I wrote in my gratitude intention journal, because I was freaking out so much. I was like, I need somebody to show up this week to guide me whether to self-publish or go the traditional route. And Sonia, the girl in Mexico City, was like, somebody's trying to figure this out. You just have to put this out into the world now.
Okay, we've got like 15 more seconds. What's the end of the story? Darn.
Well, I got connected with somebody in Mexico City and who had a self-publishing company, and I happened to be in Mexico City at that time. By the end of that week, I wound up in Mexico City out of my gratitude and intention journal. So I had written in my gratitude and intention journal, I need somebody to show up that week. I wound up in Mexico City that week, and this woman who reached out had a self-publishing company in Mexico City. So
Perfect. Now, I want to mention your website before we get off, acuriousyear.com. That's A-C-U-R-I-O-U-S-Y-E-A-R.com. Tim, thank you so much for joining us here today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And again, the book is called A Curious Year in the Great Vivarium Experiment. And I want to thank you for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.